Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode number 136 of Book Hype. Today, we're going to be doing a little bit of a mishmash of different things. We're going to play a game, we're going to talk about Shakespeare, and we're going to do a little bit of book news. So it should be fun, quick, and hopefully interesting for you guys. As usual, I'm joined by Kristen and Brittany. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
And let's jump into what we've been reading. We're going to skip me. We're back to true form. We're skipping me for this week. So, Kristen, why don't you kick us off?
Alrighty. I read The Hot Shot by Kristen Callahan, which is the fourth book in the Game On series, which I loved. It's so, 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 so good. And if you've read any of the books in her series, they kind of started off in college, and now enough time has passed that these guys are all like professionals. So this particular player, Finn, isn't necessarily from the same college that we knew the others from. And I didn't know what to think about that. I was a little nervous because the first three books were all players that we had met in the first book. Like, we knew what was going on. And this one was kind of a little bit of a departure. And I'm really, really glad that she wrote this book at this time because it was just what I needed. It was really sweet. And while he had some, you know, not so fantastic qualities, he also like really redeemed himself, and it was beautiful. When she originally set out to write Hotshot, she had imagined it to be about another character, and she had actually told the romance community at large that this was going to be a book about Ace, who was like the backup quarterback. And when she started to write it, everything with the election really like just affected her, and she couldn't get his story out. Like, she just kept trying and kept failing and couldn't figure out why it was so hard. So she kind of just got inspiration for this story for Finn and Chess. Chess's name is actually Chester, which is great. And it flew. Like, the second she started writing it, it just flew out of her, and she was like, okay, this is exactly what I needed to do. Like, I needed to just step away. So it may not have been Ace's book, because I know everybody's really excited for that one, but it was a really, really good story. Other than that, I have been re-listening to the Rusk University series because the fourth book, All Closed Off, which I have been really excited for since All Broke Down came out, 2 years ago now. It's Stella's story, and anyone who's read All Broke Down knows exactly where Stella's story starts, because something really awful happens to her at the end of All Broke Down. And we kind of saw glimpses of her in All Played Out, and, you know, kind of saw what was going on, but we didn't get into her head to find out what she was thinking and how she was coping. So I'm really, really excited for All Closed Off, which is Stella's book, and it comes out like in a week and a half or so. So I listened to all of them and got myself ready, and I'm in the Rusk University football mindset, and I'm ready for that book so much.
Awesome. And Brittany, what about you?
Yeah, right. I am still on the Karen train. I did, however, restart listening to podcasts this week, which I think is the first step in the right direction. For a while, I was just so stressed with work and stuff that I didn't even listen to podcasts because I felt like that was working my brain too much. So I listened to like the same three songs on a playlist for like 2 weeks. And now I'm catching up on my podcast. So that's one step away from finishing my audiobook that I have going, and then one step away from actually picking up a hardcover book because it's great. Great. And I've been watching a lot of Frasier instead of reading before bed, which is counterproductive for my reading, but we'll get there. We're going to get there.
Everything's going to be okay. I will say, for my excuse, at least, is that Hypable was invited to the set of the Darkest Minds adaptation. So it was actually in Atlanta doing that, which is book related. Unfortunately, cannot talk about it. I don't even know when the embargo lifts, but once it does, maybe we'll do a little book bite section on that or whatever. So that's my book experience for the week. That, and Brittany sent me a present in the mail that made me really happy.
There was this
package on my desk when I got home, and Kristen was like, it looks like it could be like a children's book or something like that. And I was like, that's weird. Like, sometimes I do get weird things that we don't necessarily cover on Hypable, but they'll just send us like books anyway. I've gotten a couple of children's books before, and I was like, this is strange. And I open it up and it's the Disney's Hercules classic storybook that we were talking about with Caitlin last week. And Brittany, you said you ordered it before the podcast was even over.
Yeah, I Googled them because I was like, there has to be like a relatively inexpensive one online. And the first one I clicked on, I'm like, oh, that's doable. And I had it like ordered and had the delivery confirmation before we were done recording last week's book hype.
Well, it came from Thrift Books. And I was like, wait, Karen doesn't get books from there. What is this? Like, it said it on the packaging. And I was like, I know what Thrift Books is, but she wouldn't be getting a book from there. This doesn't make any sense. So I was really, really confused. And yeah, you should have seen the look on her face when she opened it. It was like, Kristen! And I was like, oh my God. She's like,
it's like, who did this? Brittany.
I was like a message that was all caps that was like, Brittany, lovely. I was like, oh no. And then at first I got nervous and then I was like, oh wait, she's home now and is opening the thing. And I meant to message Kristen being like, by the way, this strange package is coming to your house.
It's all good. We get a lot of strange packages. It's no big deal.
That's true. All I said was, did you do the thing?
And I sent back those like grimacing smiley faces.
But I'm flipping through right now and it's so beautiful. The colors are amazing. It was such a Hercules day yesterday because I got this book. I had ordered a custom marker sketch from Karen Hallian and I ordered Hades. And I went to Target and got two of the blind boxes because I've been looking for the Hades one forever. And I got Hades.
Finally.
So like literally all of this happened in the same day.
The planets are aligning.
Yes. it was a great day. Hercules forever. So I'm very happy about that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to read it. Maybe that'll be my book for next week.
They're surprisingly long.
Yeah.
Like, you sit down, honestly, like, oh yeah, I'm just going to flip through this and stuff, but it's like chapters. It's like,
yeah.
It's so text heavy.
Yeah. But man, the illustrations are beautiful.
Yeah, they really are.
Well, let's jump into our book bites now. We're going to talk about Shakespeare because apparently Shakespeare is 453 years old today and his legacy still carries on. Nobody should be surprised. He would probably be surprised, but the rest of the world, not so much. So let's talk about him and his work a little bit. If you guys want to talk about favorite plays that we've seen or read, seen him on stage or film, whatever. Brittany, you seem pretty excited to talk about one of them.
Well, it's Shakespeare derivative.
Yeah.
So I saw the musical Something Rotten 3 times. Because Christian Borle played Shakespeare in it and he was so amazing as like Shakespeare. So in Something Rotten, Shakespeare is this rock and roll like god of the time. And he wears like metal spiked collar and he like performs on this stage. His opening big number is he performs like his sonnets and there are like women in the crowd screaming back, like, you know, lines from A Midsummer Night's Dream and Romeo and Juliet. And they're like yelling for the hits and he like stage dives and there's like rock lights. And then they all like have candles up when he's like, you know, performing. It's unbelievably hilarious. And so he goes like undercover in this show and he tries to steal the next best like play. And what happens is there are these brothers called the Bottom Brothers and they go and like see a seer who they tell him like, look into the future and tell me what Shakespeare's greatest hit is going to be. And then I will write it. And so he like looks into the future and he gets the name wrong. And so he brings back the idea that musicals are going to be this huge sensation and like they're trying to explain like, you know, yes, people are going to get really excited like when kick lines start happening and that the words are sung and not just said. And then he says like, okay, so I'm getting a name. And he says Omelet instead of Hamlet. And so the Bottom Brothers write a musical about omelets. Oh my God. And it's first of all, it's hilarious. They get some of the details right, but he's like, but there are cats and phantoms. And so like all of the musical, like famous musicals come into one. And like at one point they all just like stand on stage and it's like the Rent lights. And they're it's like, it is so good and such a clever, clever show that it's definitely in the realm of Shakespeare. It's one of my favorite things I have ever seen. And I hope it tours and people get to go see it. I think it is touring. It's not on Broadway anymore, but oh.
Oh, I was going to say, would you or would you not see it a fourth time?
I almost didn't see it a third time, but Natalie bought the ticket and she was like, you're coming. I was like, okay.
Because now I really want to see it.
Yeah, it closed last year and it was, oh my goodness. It's so, so good. It closed almost a year ago today, maybe a little earlier than that, but that's wonderful. But in real Shakespeare world, my favorite is Macbeth. I absolutely love Macbeth so much. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it performed, and I haven't seen it in a movie before. I haven't seen anything. I've only ever read the play, and I could read it 100 times. So good. What about you guys? What do you like?
I have to agree with Macbeth, actually. That's usually my go-to. I just think the story is one of the more interesting ones. Like, we read quite a few in high school, and it was a little difficult for me to get into, especially with the language and everything. But Macbeth always really stuck out to me, and I really loved the opening scene and the different characters and the famous lines that, like, you just know just through osmosis through everyday life, and then you're like, oh, that came from this. And that was always really interesting to me.
Yeah, I have not had the good pleasure to see anything actually performed, with the exception of Midsummer, which was my brother's high school play, and they only did one act of it, or they didn't do like the whole play. It was an abridged version or something, because they did like two short plays and put them on as one long like experience. It was weird. But one of my favorite things about Midsummer, when my brother was putting it on, he was playing some extra or something, but his best friend was one of the four human leads in the play. And my brother was standing backstage, and his friend Steve was standing on stage and had forgotten his line. And my brother from backstage whispers, "Your line is, O proud Lysander, I seech thee, anytime." Just like Genie does on Aladdin, like when he goes, "Your line is, I'm going to free the genie." And and they all, like, Steve was in character, and as Steven said it and he realized what he just said, like, broke down and just started like laughing hysterically, and it derailed the dress rehearsal, and it was hilarious. So that is one of my favorite, like, Shakespeare moments, and it has nothing to do with Shakespeare, but it just reminds me every time I think of Midsummer, I think of them goofing off on, you know, on the side of stage, and just fun times.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few other Shakespeare plays. I've never seen Macbeth, though. Our local theater company puts on at least one Shakespeare play a year, and they're all really different. Like, they're set at different times, and they're, I saw a production of As You Like It, which was just, it was so cool the way that they did it. I've also seen Midsummer. I'm trying to remember what the last one was that I saw that was like, it was a weird, oh, Pericles. So they did Pericles, and it's, I had never read or even like knew, I knew nothing about it at all. And it was the coolest production I had ever seen. It was like set in a bar, and it was amazing. It was one of the coolest stagings of any show that I've ever seen. It was amazing. Like, they didn't change the language at all, but some parts were harder to follow just because you couldn't tell by the staging what they were trying to do. But I saw it a few times because I volunteer for this theater, so I had free tickets. And I was like, oh, I'm going to volunteer again because I think I missed a few things the first time. And yeah, I really like that. But I also liked learning about like the sonnets. That was always a fun section I think every English teacher did it just to be like, high, either highbrow or take a break. So they're like, yeah, we could teach this every year and it'd be totally fine.
Yeah.
Karen and I last year watched Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is incredibly like cool and strange. And he filmed the whole thing at his house, like over, I think it was like a long weekend or something. And it has, now looking at it, I'm like, dang it, I wish I would have watched Buffy before this, because Alex Denizov, who plays Wesley, is in it. And I don't think I appreciated him as much as I would if I watched it now. But yeah, Amy Acker, Alex Denizov, Nathan Fillion, Clark Gregg, like, it's fantastic. It was pretty great. I mean, we thought it was a little weird to hear, you know, Shakespearean verse coming out of this, like, house party at Joss's house, but it was still cool.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite adaptations. I haven't seen a whole lot of them. Then again, like, there have been so many adaptations of his work that, like, you don't necessarily know that's the source material because it's been so modernized and things have been changed. But, like, these stories are so universal. They're so timeless that you can take the beats of the story and kind of turn it into something unrecognizable. But when you go back and compare, you're like, oh yeah, these do parallel each other. This is an adaptation of something that Shakespeare did. So Much Ado was amazing. I actually want to watch it again. We'll have to watch it once we get through more of Buffy, or maybe when we finish all of Buffy and Angel, because I love Amy Acker. I think she's really awesome. And Romeo and Juliet is something that I never really liked until recently, only because I'm still, guys, still reading that novelization of it or listening to it, slowly but surely getting through it. It makes it come alive for me in a way that it hadn't before. And I'm pretty sure I saw like one adaptation of it and hated it when I was back in high school. But that was when I really did not like the story. So I don't know. Romeo and Juliet, does that count? I love that movie.
No, it does not.
Why not?
I was going to say,
the Leonardo DiCaprio version counts.
That's the one I hated.
That one I didn't like when we watched it. But I like it now. Like, I'll watch it every time it's on now. What about Shakespeare in Love? Because, first of all, it won an Oscar. Second of all, the first time I saw it, it was on, like, we had just gotten HBO. And it was, like, so exciting. And it was on one night. It was, like, I'd been watching HBO all day. Just even though the movies were horrible, I'm like, I'm going to watch all the movies. I watched Shakespeare in Love at, like, 1:30 in the morning. And it was so brilliant. I thought it was like the greatest movie ever. I immediately went out to like Walmart or something and I made my mom buy it for me on DVD and I watched it so many times. And then I watched it recently and I'm like, this wasn't that great. It wasn't such a great movie, but I have like a special place in my heart for it.
Yeah, it's been a while since I watched Shakespeare in Love. It's entertaining. I still, yeah, I'm a little confused as to why it was the big winner that year. Like,
yeah. But
it, you know, it's a solid movie, and I love that Dame Judi Dench is in it for like 0.5 seconds and won her Oscar for that.
Yeah,
like it makes me smile because it's like, yeah, she's kind of a badass. She walks in for a few, like a scene or a scene and a half, and then is like, I'm out. I think it was one of the smallest roles to ever have been nominated or win, you know, an Oscar, like, for that amount of time. Like, they clocked it, and I remember them talking about it that year. So, yeah, I like Shakespeare in Love. It's just been a while since I've had time to watch it. I'll have to get back to it eventually. 10 Things I Hate About You being an adaptation of Taming with the Shrew. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to read Taming the Shrew because of it. Like, when I finally learned, you know, what exactly was going on behind the story, like, it seems like it's just a teen movie, but, you know, knowing that it has a basis in Shakespeare always made me really interested in, like, checking that out.
And The Lion King, too. I mean, there's so many that are, you know, you just don't think about, like, daily, like, you know, once you, like, hear, like, oh, Lion King and Hamlet, like, pretty much the same, and then you look at Hamlet, and you're like, oh, my God, that's absolutely correct. It's crazy.
It really is.
Yeah, like I said, those stories are so timeless that you can just turn them into anything. And I think that's really wonderful and a testament to why his legacy is still so strong so many years later. I mean, 453. That's crazy.
Still talking about him.
Still talking about him. Now on a podcast, he'd be like, what's a podcast?
Yeah. Happy birthday, Shakespeare. He'd be like, what are these computers? What is this? Yeah.
Okay, we're going to switch gears a little bit now, and we're going to play the quote game. Maybe we should do like different iterations of this throughout the year and pick themes or something like this. But right now, what we decided to do was pick out 5 famous quotes each, and we're going to read them out to each other, and the other two people have to guess which book they're from. So we're going to be taking turns doing that. It's going to be interesting. I'm just throwing this out here right now. Like, I'm so bad at this. Like, you could pick a quote from my favorite book, and I probably would not remember that it was.
I was going to say, same here. I take no credit for any of the terrible guesses I'm going to make. Yes. Like, just do not judge me, please.
Yeah. So I'm going to do my best. But okay, Brittany, I want to kick it off with you. So why don't you give us your top quote choice.
Okay, let's go with one I think that can be figured out, because I went like really highbrow because I was like, what did I read when I was in college and high school that would have famous quotes from it? So let's do, yes, this one first. I find it wholesome to be alone part of the time. To be in company, even with the best, is soon wearisome and dissipating. I love to be alone. I never found the companion that was so companionable as solitude.
My immediate thought, see, I can't decide, like, do I pick from, like, what I think Brittany's reading versus, or, like, what she likes versus my first instinct? Because my first instinct is either going to be, like, Pride and Prejudice or Sherlock Holmes.
Okay, I know I've heard this quote before, especially the like last line, like the last part of it, and I can't place it, but because I'm gonna terribly guess, please don't judge me, I'm gonna say Catcher in the Rye.
Oh.
It is from Walden, which I did a very extensive report on in high school, and I love, love, love Walden so much.
What is that?
Henry David Thoreau goes and lives by himself on a lake. And
I do remember that now that you said that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I went there
a long time.
I went there 2 years ago, and like you can go to the site of where he built his cabin and walk the lake, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And I get why he went there. And apparently I was looking at my quotes just now, and I went with a lot of like loneliness and solitude. I don't know what I'm feeling or projecting on this game, but apparently it's leave me alone.
God, well, we'll wrap this up as soon as we can.
Yeah. Brittany, some alone time.
Kristen, what's your favorite one?
I think I may have stretched famous, especially for my last couple, for two, one or two of these, but you know, I'm making it work. I will go with one that is probably very familiar. I don't know if I would have known what book it was from, but I've definitely heard it a million times. If you want to know what a man's like, take a good look at how he treats his inferiors, not his equals.
I know this one.
And you'll probably be surprised where it came from, but you've read it, I promise.
It's not It's not To Kill a Mockingbird, is it?
No.
There's going to be a lot of silent thinking time.
I know.
We'll just insert.
People are like listening to this and like screaming the answers out. Yeah.
We'll just put in some Jeopardy music.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I know this. I know this.
I can't guess again. Can I?
I mean, I don't know the rules.
Like, take a good look at how he treats his inferiors, not his equals. Is it from Harry Potter?
Which one?
Ah, okay.
God, my second guess was going to be Huckleberry Finn.
Okay. A lot of pressure. I got seven choices.
Hey, you've narrowed it down quite a bit.
6.
No. Damn, it's from... Go ahead.
Is it from 2?
No. It's from Goblet of Fire.
Oh, that's my favorite book.
And I'm pretty sure... I know. And I'm pretty sure it's in reference to Barty Crouch and his house elf and, mm-hmm. like, all of that.
I knew it was the house elves, which is why I thought it was the second one with Chamber of Secrets and Dobby and all of that.
I was like, maybe this was Dumbledore saying something insightful for once about Voldemort. But my mind was like the U.S. Constitution, and I'm like, no, that's too good for America. And then I was like, maybe it's from, I don't know why. I was like, this has to be from a historical document. That's like where my head was for a good majority. And then when Karen said To Kill a Mockingbird, I'm like, oh, no. Definitely something like that.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. At least my guess is like I had reasons for my guesses, so I don't feel so bad that I was so wrong. And I figured it was Harry Potter.
I figured we needed a Harry Potter quote, but I tried to find one that wasn't like blatantly Harry Potter. Like it
You're
is
a wizard, Harry.
Right?
Yeah.
I wonder.
Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Just kidding. All right. The one that I want to start off with is, who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past.
I feel like I've heard the first part of this quote.
Yeah, I know I've heard this, but I don't think I've read it. I'm going to just throw my guess out there and see what sticks. I'm going to go with A Wrinkle in Time.
Who controls the past controls the future. Why do I know that? I'll go with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
No, on both accounts. This is actually from 1984 by George Orwell.
I should have known. Sense.
I know. I love this quote so much, though, because it's so relevant even today, because we talk about like history books and everything, and it's white history, you know, like all of it is European history. That's what we learn. We don't tend to learn a lot about other cultures in the same way that we learn about our own, and it's because, you know, we're the superpower right now. Who controls the present controls the past, and because we can take this angle on the past, it influences the future, because this is what we as students are learning and bringing, you know, along on our life journey. And it's kind of terrifying, like most of 1984 is.
Yeah, wow.
All right, Brittany, you're up.
Okay. Well, let's keep this lonely train going and go with solitude sometimes is best society.
Pride and Prejudice.
Negative. You're just going to keep guessing Pride and Prejudice.
She's like, I'm going to be right for one of these.
Well,
I know
it. I keep thinking of like, what would Darcy say? Like Darcy would say something.
You know
like
what? That's a good train of thought. Right? It's a good train of thought.
Like, I'm not totally crazy.
Solitude sometimes is best society. I'm so bad at this. I'm probably wrong. A Separate Piece.
Oh, that great book, but no. I thought about looking, that's funny you say that, because that was actually one of the books where I'm like, what if I chose something from A Separate Piece, because I was thinking of like high school English. And I was like, nah, no one will know what I'm talking about.
Guys, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's such a great book.
We definitely talked about this when we did our, like, back in, like, when we talked about stuff we read in school. Because I remember you going off about A Separate Piece. Like, it's my favorite. It's so good.
It's so good. I think you would like it now, too, Karen. Like, it's not, it's awesome. It's set in, like, a boarding school, and it's about these two boys, and it's really great. I think you'll like it. Can't give away the big spoiler, though. So, that I still remember, because it, like, drives me crazy. But this was actually from one of my favorite things I read in college, in completion, which was Paradise Lost.
Oh.
It's said when after the devil falls from grace as an angel and is chained to the lake.
See, I love it. I love that. I loved it in high school when we read it, and then I got the whole book and read the whole thing and hated it. It was so boring.
Well, the passages they choose to read, like, in class in high school are fantastic.
They're, like, the exciting ones.
Yeah, and then when you get the college assignment, you're like, oh, my God, I've never
seen Joke's on you. Here's a 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
You might as well just beat yourself with them. All right, Kristen, you're up next.
Okay, so this one is kind of flirting with the not-so-famousness of it, but it's just, you know, great. And I know you both have read it, so I'm totally using it. I'll take my chances against your fickle heart if it means it's mine.
Oh, boy.
And we've read this.
Yes, you both have.
Okay, so it has to be something that you forced on me to read. Okay, so it's either something by Lauren Lane or Cora Carmack, because it's the only two people you have forced me to read over time. And the only reason I want to say it might be Cora is because you just read a ton of her books. And so she might be on your brain. But I'm going to go with not Cora. I'm going to go with, no, maybe not. Maybe I will. Because I can't think of the name of the Lauren Lane book that I read. I also can't think of the Cora Carmack book that I read either. I know I read Faking It recently. That's the one where they pretend to be a couple. I'm pulling up my Kindle app to see what the name of the other one
is. It's like, do-do-do. This editing will just be taking out the giant blocks of blankness.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm, like, super wrong, but it was my first instinct, so I'm just going to say, like, The Hunger Games.
It's not The Hunger Games.
Okay. I thought maybe it was a Katniss and Peeta moment.
Oh, wait, what? No. Maybe I'm completely wrong. What is that university series you made us read on those episodes?
Fall Down one.
The Ivy, yeah. Yeah, that one. That one. The falling, the year we fell down. That one.
No, you were right the first time.
Damn it.
I was faking it. I was like, just say it, Brittany. Just say it. Say that you're done.
I was like, the other one wasn't required, though. That was one that you picked that I should read. And so I'm like, no. The other one was definitely, we definitely read it. Damn it.
Yeah, it was Faking It. It's not exactly famous, but I had to pick a line from it because it's great. And everyone should read it, and it should be famous. So
I did like that, but yeah.
So if anyone's keeping track, Kristen and I have like 0 points, and I think Brittany has like half a point twice over, so you've got a full point now.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, my next one is going to be, if you hide your ignorance, no one will hit you and you'll never learn.
Percy Jackson.
Okay. You know what's really not fair? This quote is said in The West Wing.
Oh, really?
Yes. Jed Bartlett's father says it to him. Yes. We see it in Two Cathedrals. He says it to him
when Mrs. Lincoln
in a flashback.
Is looking over him. Yes, you're absolutely right.
So I know it from that. I don't know it from a book. So I have absolutely no idea, but it's from The West Wing. So I win.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give you half a point for that.
I'm still going with Percy Jackson. I might just guess Percy Jackson until we're done now.
It is from Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury.
Ah, that makes so much sense because...
So then Sorkin stole it.
Yeah, he did. Because they were talking about Fahrenheit 451 being banned from the library.
Right. Mm.
And so that makes a lot of sense, actually.
I really like this quote because I try to, I mean, I don't want anyone to hit me, but I freely admit when I don't know things because how else will you learn otherwise? I think so many people are so concerned about like not looking stupid that they hide their ignorance. But in a lot of ways, ignorance can lead to more opportunities. So I love it. All right, Brittany, back to you. This will be our final one.
I gotta pick one. I hope that Kristen picks the only other one that I know exactly what it's from. On her list.
I figured you were hoping.
Yeah,
so.
Now you're
don't next. Pick it.
Okay, I'll do what a treacherous thing to believe that a person is more than a person. Just to, I'm going to give you a hint. I'm easing up on my high school and college required reading. It's
Pride
not.
And Prejudice. No, just kidding. If it's right, I'm going to be really mad, but no. Literally, the only things I can think of right now are Pride and Prejudice and Sherlock Holmes. Like, what else does Brittany even read?
Okay, it is neither Jane Austen nor Arthur Conan Doyle.
Okay.
None of
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Actually, sorry, Karen corrected me last night at trivia because Arthur Conan Doyle was the answer to a question, and she goes, it's Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
That is correct, so. But I always feel like I sound pretentious when I say that, so I never, like, I try not to. I didn't pick any Sherlock quotes.
That's really upsetting.
Because Shocker. They're really, the ones that I love are very obvious that they're detective related.
Mm.
Gotcha. Okay.
What a treacherous thing to believe that a person is more than a person.
Okay. I can't pick the specific book, but I'm going to say Dr. Seuss.
No.
I didn't think it was, but it was close. And it almost rhymed. So I'm like, he could have stuck it in there somewhere.
It does sound like the person's a person no matter how small quote.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
I literally cannot think of any other books right now. Like, I don't know why.
It's hard when you have like the whole catalog of the world to sort through. Yeah.
Right. If we do this themed, it would make things a little easier.
Yeah. Next time. We're learning. We're learning here on.
Hey, baby steps.
What if it's. No. I'm just going to say it. Frankenstein.
It is from John Green's Paper Towns.
Oh. I've never read that.
Yeah, I haven't either.
I'm sure he loves that line so much, it must be in the movie.
I've not seen the movie either.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
I haven't seen it yet either.
I was like, oh, I'll pick a John Green quote. They'll definitely
They'll
get it.
They'll know that.
Oh, yeah, I refuse to go as easy as The Fault in Our Stars.
Because, yeah, those quotes are everywhere.
I was like, but there's at least a movie adaptation of this other one that maybe they'll get it.
Yeah. All right, Kristen, you're up. Final one.
All right, I'm sadly not going to go with the obvious one, Brittany. I knew you would know that one.
Of course.
Knew it. And so I'm just too nice. But I'm going to go with, a reader lives 1,000 lives before he dies. The man who never reads lives only one. And just as a hint, it is a like popular author, so many people know of this person. And I don't think either of you have ever read the book.
I definitely know the quote. So I think it was on a bookmark at some point in my life. It's a male author because only a male would use man who never reads. Karen, what do you think?
I have zero guesses.
If I've never read it, then...
But it's a popular author.
I know this quote. It's just so frustrating.
Google it. Kristen will never know.
Rude. Cheater. Rude. She thought about cheating last night at trivia and I yelled at her.
Well, it was a question about Australia and I just really wanted to talk to Natalie. So
she was busy with David Boreanaz.
Truth.
Okay.
I can't even think of people. This is the worst idea.
I can't even think of things I haven't read. I'm like, I've clearly read everything.
Okay.
I've clearly read it.
If we ever do like a generic one again, we should give like three options.
Yeah.
Make it multiple choice or something like that. Because having the grand world of books to choose from is
another clue.
I'm trying to give you one that's not going to give it away.
I mean, I just Harry Potter out of thin air, so.
I have read, okay, this quote comes from a series. I have read some of the series. I did not finish it.
You never finish anything.
I finish everything.
That's so rude.
When it comes to books, I don't put off endings. It's TV that I put off endings.
Tell that to Magnus Chase.
Listen, that's not putting it off. I just ran out of time. Like, I'm working on it. We'll get there.
And you've read a few of them, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Chronicles of Narnia.
Series of Unfortunate Events.
No and no. This comes from A Dance with Dragons by George R.R. Martin.
Oh. Yeah, no idea.
I've definitely never read it. I know you guys haven't, but I found the quote and I was like, that's a really nice quote. And so I went with it.
All right. For my final one, I'm going to go with, finally, from so little sleeping and so much reading, his brain dried up and he went completely out of his mind.
Percy Jackson.
I did know popular authors, like no current day stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, that helped. Not only narrows it down to like, you know, 600 years of literature.
See, I went with the more modern thing
because I definitely went classics.
I did all classics until I was like, I can't do all classics. Let me throw in a John Green easy one for them. And so we see how that went. Wait, which one did you read? Oh, finally, from so little sleeping and so much reading, his brain dried up and he went completely out of his mind. From so little sleeping.
Okay, I don't know. So, and I don't remember what clue you just gave us. So I'm saying Of Mice and Men and calling it a day.
I'm just going to stick with Percy Jackson.
It is Don Quixote.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Oh, geez.
Makes sense, though.
Yes, it does.
Because he did go crazy. But I also thought it was very relevant to this podcast, although I have not been reading so much that my brain's dried up. But that is the goal, I suppose. All right, let's move on to a little bit of book news before we wrap up here. So we have a couple of things that have been coming out lately. I maybe should have done a little more research on some of these, but the first story we've got up is that Maggie Stiefvater's The Raven Cycle is going to be adapted for television. And let me tell you, there are some people on the staff that are beside themselves with excitement.
Yeah, okay. I started this series. I read like half of the first book at work, like I did it as an audiobook, and I think the narrator just got on my nerves and I ended up just turning it off and never went back to it. Like, I've heard such good things about the series, but it just has never been one that I like fell completely head over heels for. Like, I could not get through the first book. And so, yeah, I'd be interested to see the show though. Cause like I loved the idea of it and the setting and all of that. Like it seemed like really interesting idea. So I'm sure that the show will be really cool.
I'm in the same boat. I didn't finish the first book. I checked it out from the library and then it was due before I knew it. So I didn't bother to renew it. I sent it back, but I feel like as a favor to my friends who are obsessed with it, I should try it again. I know that there are like some attractive men with cars and problems that people like. So that's all I really know though about it. I couldn't tell you any more except that I went to a signing with Maggie and everyone there was really excited to talk to her about, I guess one of the books in the series was coming out, but she was touring with David Levithan. So I only went for David Levithan and I got to cut the line because I was the only person there just waiting for David Levithan.
Oh my goodness.
He was like standing there and I only had his books in my hands and he was just like, he like pointed to her and I shook my head no. And he was like, come on. So like people were like meeting her and then like getting a book signed by him. But I just went and like talked to him instead.
That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
So a little background on the show, at least. I have not read these books at all either, but I have heard fantastic things about them. I think I own the first two, so I really should get around to that eventually. But Catherine Hardwicke is attached to direct and produce. And then we've got Andrew Miller, who wrote on The Secret Circle as the showrunner. And Catherine Hardwicke, of course, is from Twilight. So interesting experiences coming together for this.
I will say Catherine Hardwicke makes me a little concerned, although I think her style will fit Maggie Stiefvater's like, like the tone of those books. Catherine kind of, it fits that. So that works in my brain. The Secret Circle, which I hadn't watched until last year, is actually really underrated. Like, that show was better than I thought it was. Like, I just assumed it was another, you know, CW show, and I kind of didn't give it a chance when it was on, but I really wish it had gotten more than one season. So I'm cautiously optimistic, because I really think, you know, having Andrew Miller involved in this might be a really fun and interesting partnership, like for him and Catherine to work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the tone could really work well for this. And Universal Cable Productions is the one who kind of picked this up. And Natalie wrote this article, and she's a huge fan of the series. And she says, given their lineup, we'd hazard a guess at the series airing on Sci-Fi, though USA or an online platform are both possibilities. I think an online platform would probably be really good, just because there is a huge contingent of people who love these books. And if they can get like a Netflix or a Hulu series or something, you can take a little more time. The production quality tends to be a little higher, and it tends to take a closer look at the story and try to get all of those details in there. So I think that would be cool. Although Sci-Fi is doing pretty good. Magicians is on Sci-Fi.
I could see them making a night of it and pairing the Magicians, like having this be the lead into Magicians or something.
Yeah.
Because this is more of, it's a little younger. So if you let in with that, it could be an interesting pair. So.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And speaking of adaptations, Brittany, you said you finished Big Little Lies, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you think of this article about the author saying she's attempting to write season two?
I think it is interesting. I worry that, you know, I thought everyone's performance in the show was fantastic. And I think that they did a really great job completing the novel in the series that it had. And it doesn't have to go on by any means whatsoever, especially does not have to go on with the entirety of the cast being there full time. But I do think this article that Andrew wrote, and he loved the series. There's a bit in here about the character of Bonnie and how her story, one of the characters, their story, and their like rough abusive past, like it wasn't told in the series. I don't think that there was room for it, and I think that they made the necessary cutback with that character storyline in the series in order to highlight the rest of what was going on for such a limited showtime that they had. So I guess there is the possibility of it going on, but I kind of think that it's been a real like 180 with the comments that have been coming out being like, no, it was a one and done and we wrapped it up and everything's good now. Like, you know, like that was what we intended to do. We intended to tell this one story in a little pocket. Limited series are very big right now. Adaptations are huge. But when the story's done, is there that need to continue it? And I agreed because like as soon as the last episode aired, everyone who was watching this series blew up being like, we need a season two now. We need more. We need more. And I was like, no, it's done. Like that's the story. Like you flip the last page of the book and that's it. And I don't know if it should exist further on TV, but I don't know. I guess more would be good if they can successfully branch off of the main cast that they had and focus on some of the more minor characters, or just build an entirely new story from that author. I don't personally need more. But I think there is an interesting possibility to make it happen. And people love it, really love it. Yeah. So
it's
they're basically going to fill out the entire limited series category themselves, that whole cast for them.
I think it's really interesting, especially seeing 13 Reasons Why right now, because a lot of people are saying, you know, again, I still haven't watched it, but you come to the end of that story and like, that's kind of the end, except for maybe there could be more, and people are kind of debating whether it needs it or not. And I think there's a lot of merit in having a limited series where you put all of your time and effort into this story. You don't have to worry about, okay, what are we going to do for season two? How are we going to lead into this? How are we going to keep this interesting? Trying to one up the first season. You kind of have this contained story and present it to people and say, this is it. This is the experience you get. And now we're done. I understand loving something so much that you want to continuously stay in that world. So I get the people who want a season two, but also if the story is done, I don't necessarily want them to mess with it. And I think maybe like instead this team could go make something else and give us another limited series that really like brings us in, like give us something new, give us something different. So there's merit on both sides, but yeah, you really have to weigh whether or not it's worth continuing the story because you don't want that to taint the first season.
Exactly. And you don't want you also don't want the original cast of characters who you did fall in love with. Like, I don't think there's any more room for Nicole Kidman or Reese Witherspoon to keep going in this series. Like, there's just not. And it would be a cheap cameo. I mean, I'm sure it wouldn't be financially cheap, but it would be story-wise like a cheap way to bring them back into the fold. I don't think that they need any more screen time. And it's the same, like you were saying with 13 Reasons Why. I know you haven't watched it yet, but I do not feel the need for any more 13 Reasons Why. And that's not because it was bad. I think it was done. And I actually think it was a little too long, to be completely honest. I think they could have cut an entire episode out of it and still gotten the same story across. So yeah, I think that the characters were great and they were fully developed, and you know, you got a sense of everything that was going on in both. This is not speaking to both series, that I don't think that they're, I think they could ruin it. Like, you know, you're oversaturating the audience with these characters, and the reason why they're so compelling is because you have their full complete story. You're not missing anything, which is why you feel so attached and connected to them, because they're done.
I never watched True Detective, but we all know that like the first season of that went over like gangbusters, like everybody loved it. And then the second season basically bombed. So it's like, HBO, please learn from your mistakes. Like, you know, it's okay if something is limited, but just, you know when enough is enough. Like, not that everything needs to be truncated, but like, as you said, like this is, you know, the story and this is where these characters end. And if there's a way to continue it, like it makes sense, but then that's fine. But if not, don't push it.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of continuing stories on past maybe their end date, I want to talk about Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And this, not the adaptations, which there's plenty to talk about there, but we got news that book 5 is coming out later this year. And of course, the original author, Stieg Larsson, died, and David Lagercrantz took over with the fourth book. And Danielle, one of our friends on Hypeable, actually has read all of these books, read the fourth one, didn't like it as much as the original three. So I think there's something to be said there, too, about, you know, something maybe being passed its prime. And of course, this is kind of a different situation altogether, but an interesting thing to talk about. Maybe we'll do that at some point too. But I just wanted to mention that if anybody is interested, the fifth book in the series is going to be coming out on September 12th, and it's going to be called The Girl Who Takes an Eye for an Eye.
Sounds like a bad Bond movie follow-up.
Yeah, it does kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I did the audiobooks for the first couple. I think I've only read two, and I really liked them, but I don't know. Yeah, that title sounds kind of weird.
Yeah, I like the adaptations, to be honest. I think that the character, Lisbeth Salander, is really interesting, but I have not read the books, and I've only seen the first movie twice over, the original Swedish one, I think it is. And the American one, and I haven't explored it any further, but we might be reviewing it on Hypeable. Danielle might be picking this up, so if you guys are interested, check that out around September, and hopefully we will have something up for that. Speaking of some books that might be divisive, though, we've got Grasshopper Jungle. You guys remember Grasshopper Jungle?
I don't want to.
Yeah.
This is one book, like, I can never get out of my head.
It's so striking, and maybe not in the best way, but striking nonetheless. And we learned quite a while ago that they were going to be making it into a movie, which we were like, okay, how is this going to go? And it was a whole thing. Well, I didn't realize back then necessarily who was taking on the reins of doing this movie, and it's Edgar Wright. And I'm sure, like you guys, I know Kristen in particular, like you're a huge movie buff, you know directors all up and down, and I have no idea. But for anyone who's like me, Edgar Wright was the guy who originally signed on for Ant-Man and ended up having creative differences with Marvel, so he backed off of that. And he also just recently did Baby Driver, which people are raving about. It comes out this June, but it's getting a lot of attention right now. And we have a review of that up on the site if you guys are interested. But yeah, he's the one that's taking on Grasshopper Jungle. And now he's getting a new studio. The film used to be under Sony, and now it's New Regency, who even beat out Netflix. Like, Netflix wanted this, and New Regency apparently wanted to pay more because they really wanted this movie. So what do you guys think of all of that?
Well, it means that there's some tough competition to hopefully get it right. Mm-hmm. I think this movie could be, it's interesting because it could fall between like horror because it is so terrifying and gross and like really tragic in some elements. But then again, it is like a YA type of story. So I feel like it's like the perfect medium for Netflix. And the fact that a studio is vying for it, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I have never read this. I clearly was not a book hype regular when you guys read this, because I've heard of it a million times and I remember Karen talking about it, but I never read it. Just reading the synopsis, though, it screams Edgar Wright. Like, they definitely have the right director on board because he can handle some of the most absurd, like insane things. Like, if you've ever seen Shaun of the Dead, which is directed by him, like that movie is insane, but he can like pull it all together and make it work. And yeah, I can see him having a blast putting this together. I can see the argument for Netflix. Like, it does kind of feel like it could be successful Netflix fodder, but more often right now, like what I've kind of noticed is that when a movie is a Netflix original, it's kind of known as a Netflix original rather than being the work of a specific director or something. So a director with as extensive a filmography as Edgar Wright may have like, it may have had them leaning toward theatrical release rather than Netflix because of his name and his name recognition and the fact that they may be able to make money at the box office with it. So may have had something to do with it.
That's a great point.
Yeah. I'm really interested in seeing how this is going to play out because the book screams like a B horror movie. Like, that is the tone of the book. So if you're taking somebody who understandably is becoming better known and is therefore taking on maybe larger projects, or his projects become larger because of his name, how do you do that necessarily with a story like this? Now, that's not to say that there aren't plenty of mainstream movies that have that tone anyway, but it's so interesting to me to see like how people are going to react who maybe have never read this book, have never heard of Andrew Smith, the author, don't really care about the source material, just kind of care about Edgar Wright. And they go into this movie. And again, you know, his fans might be accustomed to this, but if it becomes a theatrical release, like a mainstream thing, people are going to be like, what? Grasshopper Jungle. Okay. And it's about, excuse me? And like, how, like, is it too weird to be successful?
I don't know. I think it has such a big, like the people like you and I, Karen, who hear Grasshopper Jungle and immediately get a chill. Like, you know, it has that draw for the people who have read it and need to, like, I would have to see how it's done. I want to see what they're going to do with this, because it's going to be terrifying, personally. I didn't even like reading it. I don't know if I'm going to be able to sit there watching it, but I'm definitely going to check it out. And I think that it could bring in, depending on how they go about it, I think it could bring in a really wide audience. Like, if they don't make it too graphic and too, like, scary, it could bring in a younger audience. And I think that there's a wide appeal for this movie, because it's so weird. It's such a weird concept, and yet it's so memorable that I think seeing it would leave just as lasting of an impression as us reading it.
Maybe more so because the visuals in that book were so strong. I can only imagine what that's going to be like on screen.
Yeah.
I see this being like an instant cult classic, honestly. I think the people who like this are really going to like this movie. And the people who don't are going to be like, why was this even made? Like, what is this even about? But we shall see. It's still a long way off, unfortunately.
Did you guys say this was like YA? So Austin and his friend Robbie are like kids?
Yeah.
Or are they a little older?
They're a little teens. Older. They're kids. Like, yeah, they're teens.
Okay, just curious. Because like, I want to see how he fits Simon Pegg into this movie. Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg like go together. Like,
I know the perfect role for him. He could play the store owner, Karen, like the clerk at the where he finds like the egg thing in that store. He would definitely play that role.
Because they kind of go together, it just works. And so I would love to see him like sneak him in there somewhere. That would be cool.
Oh yeah, no, he could definitely, he would fit into this world. He would have to have an American accent, but he would fit into this world so well. I actually even think that Edgar Wright could play the shop owner better, but if he needs to get, you know, Simon in there, then that's fine.
All right. Speaking of casting now, our last bit of news is that Jude Law has been cast as young Dumbledore in Fantastic Beasts. And this was another divisive kind of casting, especially for Fantastic Beasts because of the whole Johnny Depp thing. But a lot of people are like, I don't know about this. And others are really kind of taken to it. And one of our other writers on the site, Selena, wrote an article called, Okay, but Jude Law is actually the perfect Dumbledore for Fantastic Beasts. And I honestly don't have very many feelings about this. I actually really love Jude Law, but didn't necessarily think about him in this role. So I don't know. What were your guys' first instincts upon hearing this news?
Well, my first instinct was, damn it, now I have to go and continue watching Fantastic Beasts movie, even though I was going to quit them. I heard it like mid-afternoon at work, and I didn't have time to like process it. And by the time I like had caught the news, it had already been out for a couple of hours. And everybody was already on sides. So I'm just like walking the battlefield line like, okay, I'm not going to say anything because I don't know who's going to attack me with what argument first. And I really stayed out of the entirety of the news around it. I didn't even read, I didn't read this article until just today because I was like, I don't want it to inform my opinion. Like, I don't want to think about it right now. And before I clicked the article, I did think about it, and my mind kept going to The Talented Mr. Ripley, and Jude Law still looks good, but man, if they could have cast this role with that young, amazingly attractive Jude Law, I feel like they're casting too old, which Jude Law looks better than any male, pretty much. He's got those eyes that are just, you feel youthful looking at him. But, you know, to play in contrast to Johnny Depp, it's still the Johnny Depp problem. I have no problem with Jude Law playing Dumbledore. I think he's going to be great. And I'm very excited for him to be in the Wizarding World. I just wish that it wasn't too late to recast the other role. I think he's ruining the whole movie, Johnny Depp.
I don't know about Johnny Depp. Like, I'm with everybody on that. But I have to say, I was geeked to find out that Jude Law was going to be playing Dumbledore. He has the Richard Harris, like, quiet intensity that that's what I pictured as I was reading Dumbledore in the books. Like, as I was reading the Harry Potter books and, you know, this wise sage old man who just knows everything and, like, just has so much wisdom to share, Jude Law can embody that without a doubt. Like, I've always found that he has this unique way of kind of falling into his characters. Like, I don't necessarily see Jude Law when I watch his movies. Like, I can see the character, I can stop seeing the actor. And so I really think to get a name that would match, because they have to get a name that can match Johnny Depp, if Dumbledore and Grindelwald are going to be Dumbledore and Grindelwald, you have to have actors who kind of are at the same level, like, of famousness, whatever that word is. And so I knew it was going to be somebody that we'd recognize, but I couldn't have been happier about Jude Law. You know, Johnny Depp is what it is, but they definitely got Dumbledore right.
Random aside, they announced this the same time they announced who was going to be Cable in Deadpool 2, and I was really mad about this. So I think this one, like, flew under the radar for me because I was so mad about Cable. But anyway, that is a different story for a different podcast. So just scrolling through this article really quick, I think Selena makes some really good points. She talks about his eyes, definitely the intensity, the color and everything. And the whole, you know, Dan Radcliffe's eyes thing has been sort of a half joke for most of the franchise. And obviously, yes, Jude Law is a great actor. He is really brilliant and he can play a lot of different things. I'm hoping, my whole thing too with Johnny Depp was like, when I look at him, like, I'm not going to see Grindelwald. I'm going to see Johnny Depp. That's just how it's going to be with me. I'm less familiar with Jude Law than I am Johnny Depp, so maybe it won't be as big of a deal, but I was kind of hoping that they would cast somebody I didn't really recognize so that I could lose myself in that story. But again, it is what it is. They didn't necessarily have to pull in a big name because people are going to go see these movies anyway, but it's Jude Law. Like, I don't think too many people are going to be complaining. She also makes the point that Dumbledore's sexuality is in good hands. He has portrayed a number of non-straight characters. I guess Lord Alfred Douglas in Wild. See also Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. And slightly more ambiguous, but not really, The Talented Mr. Ripley and Gattaca. So comfortable doing that, walking that line, which is going to be interesting to see play out on screen nonetheless, because we all know that Dumbledore is not straight, and I want to see how they handle that in Fantastic Beasts. Are you guys worried about that, or do you think they're going to do an okay job?
I'm worried about it. I really am, because just some of the language around the more, like, post-Harry Potter reveals has been iffy, and I won't be comfortable until I see it, you know, because I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket and then just be completely let down, because there is that possibility that something might not work out. It's the same thing. Like, it's almost like the cursed child argument. Like, it wasn't perfect. It was, like, played well, but on paper, it's not great. Like, you know what I mean? And that's just a story. This is a bigger thing. And I'm hoping that the attention and love is given to it. And it's not just being done because, oh, we're trying to, like, make a statement. You know, it's done because it makes sense for the character and it makes sense in the world, and it's given the proper attention and care, and it's developed well and not just done for a flash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, let's face it. Dumbledore versus Grindelwald is a huge story, like, to tell. It's that looming story in the wizarding world, like, that everybody knows, and, you know, it's like these characters are so much bigger than life that I'm nervous about the whole idea of these two squaring off on screen. Like, it seems like that's where we're building, and there's a lot of potential for this whole thing to just collapse. So I'm hoping that they really give it the time and the energy that it needs to get it right, because everybody, as Potter fans, we all already know a lot about this story just from the Deathly Hallows and you know, what we've learned about Grindelwald and about Dumbledore from the Harry Potter books. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle everything and and just manage to, if they can manage to like match what people have been seeing in their heads and putting, you know, putting together themselves all these years.
Yeah. The last point Selena makes is that she's here for a young, sexy Dumbledore. And I don't know that I am. What am I going to do if Dumbledore's super sexy? Like, he was born old, like, with a beard and his little hat. Can we just all agree on that?
Like, he was, like, fully formed under a rock somewhere.
Yeah. And just, like, he was just old Dumbledore. Like, what am I going to do if I found myself, like, inherently attracted to young Dumbledore?
I think what's going to help a little bit with that is I don't think they're going to be calling, like, I'm sure they called him Grindelwald, but I don't, you know, I don't think they're going to be calling him Dumbledore, or hopefully he won't be going on by a last name basis, and like we'll get to know this person as Albus,
right? So it'll be like a disconnect almost.
I'm hoping that that's the route that they go, because like, sure, you have to introduce him and say his name a couple of times, but he's not Professor. Like, you know, well, he is technically, because he was at the school.
Right. But it doesn't carry the same like gravitas as like.
Exactly. Like, I feel like.
Time.
Yeah. If we're not, I mean, we're probably going to see Hogwarts again, I'm thinking, but we're only going to, maybe they'll just, if they stick to like just, oh, Professor, and not, oh, Professor Dumbledore, and they stick to Albus, I think it'll be a little bit better. Or maybe he goes by Brian, you know?
I was thinking about this. I was like, he goes by AP because he's Albus Percival. So he's like, AAP, how's it going? Like, oh, it would be so
no,
weird.
No, I'm shooting that down right now. Oh gosh.
Percival Wolfric. He goes by Wolfric.
Yeah.
Hey, Wolfie. Everyone just whistles at him. Okay, yeah. That went to a place near the end. But
yeah, it did.
Some interesting news coming out, and definitely that is something we will be keeping an eye on, obviously. Lots to come on Hypebol for the Fantastic Beasts franchise, I am sure. But we are less concerned with that and more concerned with next week, which is our much-anticipated, much-put-off author spotlight on Jane Austen. Brittany is beside herself.
I can't even handle it.
So it's going to be a good time. Maybe it'll end up being a supersized episode. I don't know yet. I actually have a lot of legitimate questions about Jane Austen. So I hope you brush up, Brittany, because
I'm planning on it.
I'm coming at you with that. So that is definitely going to be next week. And I have to read Pride and Prejudice. And I believe I also have to read Emma. So that's a thing I need to get done this week. what were you doing for that, Kristen?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I know we had all picked books. I thought I was supposed to read Emma, but now I'm not so sure.
Well, I think I got sent my Christmas book was
Emma.
I think
so too. Because I know you were supposed to read Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, that's been a long time coming. I also need to watch some of the adaptations before we jump into this.
I don't know if there's time. You got better start with Colin Firth right now. Well, read the book,
boy.
And then get into Colin Firth. Because you have to watch that one first. I feel like watching the other one ruins it. Firth has to be your first Darcy.
See, I will not watch the Colin Firth one with you because he's not my Darcy, because it's not the first one I saw. I didn't have a guide through Pride and Prejudice. The first one I saw was the Keira Knightley one, and I really like him, and he's my Darcy. So I understand. I know in college I had a group of friends who loved that 5-hour version, and I've seen like the first hour, but then I fell asleep because I am a terrible human.
It's okay. My friend literally just finished Pride and Prejudice and watched the Keira Knightley version first as well. And she was like, she said the same thing. She's like, I'm finding this other one like really boring. And I'm like, no, because you watched it.
Last. You did it in the wrong order.
Like, I gave you a very specific outline of things to do. But it's okay. I mean, I've resigned myself to the fact that I have my BBC adaptation friends and I have my lesser Keira Knightley adaptation friends.
It's really just me, because my first Darcy was Sam Riley.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you'll experience a different kind of Darcy. And I think your first Darcy is kind of your Darcy, so we'll see if Karen really is attached to the zombie version.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, yes, Jane Austen is forthcoming, so I hope you guys enjoy that. And I hope you liked this episode. It was a little bit of everything, and I think we're going to try to play some more games throughout the year. Just keep it interesting for when we have some downtime.
Games are fun.
I liked this. Yeah, we'll come up with some more. If you have any ideas for us, let us know. We are slowly but surely getting back on track, so we'll let you know what else is coming up probably after next week. We'll let you know what's coming up in May. But until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.